During the 16th century, there had been one fairly serious drawback to venal offices as investments, and this was the so-called 40-day rule. It was a kind of, institutional archaism. But the rule worked like this. Any officer who sold his office or transferred his office had to survive the transaction by 40 days. If he didn't survive the transaction by 40 days, the office would then revert to the crown. Now, given the high rates of mortality and the frequency of sudden death due to disease and whatnot, this tended to undermine the value of the office as an investment. If you wanted to pass it on to your child in particular, you had to, this would usually be done, near your death, as part of your last will and testament. You had to be sure to live another 40 days after the transfer, otherwise your child wouldn't inherit the property. But in the year 1604, King Henry II made an interesting change. He stipulated that every officer who annually paid to the crown an annual 1/60th, that is to say roughly 1.7%, of the value of his office would be exempted from this 40-day rule. That is to say, for a little extra payment, you could be exempted from this 40-day rule absolutely. And this was a godsend for venal officers. There's a diarist by the name of Pierre de l'Étoile, who kept a diary in Paris during the later 16th century and early 17th century. And de l'Étoile notes that on the first working day of every January, huge crowds of venal officers would line up in the snow, in the rain, in the mud, just, incredibly eager to pay this polette because it made their investment in their office an awful lot more valuable. From the crown's point of view, the polette also offered significant advantages. In this 1.7% tax, the polette was called that, got that name after the name of the official who invented it. From the crown's point of view, establishing ironclad heritability of venal offices fueled an explosion in the market value of these offices, and the prices of venal offices would then double or even triple in some cases over the next 20 years after this administrative change in 1604. Moreover, there was a political advantage as well, and that is that the polette undercut the patronage power of the great aristocrats, of the grandees, because fewer offices now became vacant by death. They were instead sold or inherited, and that made it harder for aristocrats to place their own clients in the machinery of the state. Now, that reviews the kinds of financial techniques and measures that Henry IV and Sully tried to deploy in order to achieve financial stability. And at least briefly, the French crown did achieve a kind of financial stability, so much so that in the year 1618, the institution of venal office holding would actually be abolished. But this fiscal stability would soon be overturned by the much more aggressive foreign policies of Cardinal Richelieu and Louis XIII, whom, as we've seen in earlier lectures before, involved themselves in a growing commitment to support the enemies of the Spanish and Austrian Habsburgs during the 30 Years' War. Now, we've already analyzed the implications of French intervention from the point of view of international relations. I'd like to now look, in the time that remains, on the implications of French involvement in the 30 Years' War from the point of view of domestic politics. Beginning in 1620, and in order to finance primarily the wars against the Huguenots to put down these rebellions, the crown began mortgaging the future receipts of taxes to its own venal office holders in exchange for cash advances. In other words, the taxes would be farmed out to the tax officials themselves. Unfortunately, the crown found it hard to stop doing this, and by the year 1634, the projected levies show that fully 52% of all direct taxes were now going to go to the tax farmers themselves in interest payments, and the crown had so far mortgaged itself that it wasn't getting much yield on its taxes. What the crown decided to do at this point in 1634 was arbitrarily to cut in half the interest rates that it paid on these cash advances. Now, by doing so, the crown did manage to slash its own debt servicing costs by something like £10 million, but the tax officers themselves were furious because they had been cheated out of the value of their investment. Moreover, the solution was really only a temporary one because the French crown was immediately faced with a new difficulty, and that is war with Spain was imminent. The French crown was about to enter the 30 Years' War openly in 1635, and this meant that even higher taxes were going to have to be collected. But there was a problem. Having just cheated its own tax officials out of £10 million, how could the crown now rely on these same officers to collect the new higher taxes? The crown thus found itself in a real quandary. It was desperate for money, but it had alienated the very people on whom it relied to collect that money. There was, in a sense, only one solution, and that was to dispatch the intendants, these people who at least seemed to operate outside the boundaries of the venal office-holding system, send them to the provinces to oversee tax collection. And between 1634 and 1642, that's in fact what happened. Royal tax collection in the French provinces was overseen by the intendants. What we've seen now, to summarize thus far, is the kind of rising power of the French state in all aspects of administration. But it's worth stressing that this rising power required agents, royal officials of all kinds. Yet what we've also seen at the same time is that the expansion of the power of the French crown also drove it to maltreat the very agents of its own power. This was kind of the administrative equivalent of a revolving debt problem. That is to say, the French crown was always finding itself under pressure to establish new agents to circumvent the problems created by the maltreatment of previous generations of agents. And obviously, this was not a situation which could go on forever. What we're going to find out in the next lecture, that the crown was about to get itself into extremely serious trouble.